language.
Welcome to Correctional Commentary, a podcast about the ins and outs of corrections, an uncensored view from behind the walls, hosted by Robbie and Caleb.
Hi, welcome to Correctional Commentary, the episode 2. I am Caleb, your host, along with my wonderful co-host, Robbie. On this episode, rookie year.
Yeah, so I guess first off, let's start with our very first days of whenever you get hired on and, you know, you get that job offer. So in my experience with what happened with me, we did the, you know, you got to go through a psychological evaluation. You have to go through a medical evaluation, you know, just to, they're very easy, I guess, would be the best way to say, you know, if you're not insane, you will pass it.
Yeah. I was about to say it's almost too easy of qualifications.
Yeah.
But that's kind of one of the reasons why you can attribute, why we have such a high turnover rate, especially in that first year. So it's
like, and if you're lucky, you'll end up with a period of time right away where it's called job shadowing, and you will get, you know, you'll get to go around the facility before you go to the academy and get to get kind of an idea of what it's like. And, you know, I still remember my first days starting, you know, at the maximum security facility that I started at. Whenever you walk through that door and, you know, those big steel doors slam behind you, you know, it's surreal.
I know for me that I felt the same. I too started my career at a maximum security institution. I transferred before I went to the academy to the facility that I ended up at, but I still, I remember it was a culture shock. Describe it as that. It's about as close as I can get, but it still doesn't describe the entire thing.
It changes your outlook on life
whenever
you experience that. But, you know, if everything, you know, I really enjoy whenever new recruits get to have that period of time, because the reality of this career field is, you know, it's not bright for everybody.
No.
Even, you know, if you're determined.
Yeah,
if you're determined, it's going to, you know, people are going to get weeded out really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
You're either cut out for it or you're not.
Yeah.
It's a very high stress, but also, you know, very, very high rewarding career.
I would say high rewarding, but to some degree, I feel like that when the rewards do come, they're all at once, but they're definitely not, it's not consistent throughout the career. You know, you might go 6 months without having anything good happen. It's not like an office job where, like, Monday can be the greatest day in the world, Tuesday it's the worst, and it just goes on that way. There was times throughout my career, man, where a month would go by, and I mean, I was on top of my game. I was making busts left and right. I was the king of the world.
And I think that, you know, also falls in what facility you're at.
Yeah.
Like how relaxed the facility is and how relaxed the facility is, how, you know, if you're going to a facility that what the inmates will say, quote unquote, is a real prison.
Yeah. Yeah. As we discussed in episode 1.
And what they consider that is where the COs sit back and let the inmates run it.
Very much a laissez-faire type of confinement
among the COs. But let's circle back around to after you do that job shadow period. I know for some people it could be anywhere from 2 weeks to a month.
For me, my job shadow phase technically, because when I was at the Max Security Institution before I transferred, we did, probably 2 months, maybe. Don't hold me to that time frame of job shadows, because they were waiting for an academy date to open up. And even when I transferred to that my final facility, it was still, gosh, probably another 2 or 3 weeks after I transferred that I went to the academy.
Yeah, I mean, and unfortunately, it's a good thing and a bad thing. Mm-hmm. It's super boring because you can't do anything.
Well, I don't know about you, but during my job shadowing at the Maximum Security Institution, I became a professional grocery shopper because I worked the commissary with inmates.
Whenever I say that you can't do anything, you know, you got to be arm's reach from an officer. You got to, you know, you can't, or you're not supposed to. Mm-hmm. You can't have a radio. You can't have keys. All the inmates know that you're brand new.
Because you don't have a badge. You don't have what the bling, so to speak, as officers that real officers have, the ones that have been through the academy have. So it you stick out like a sore thumb. The only thing that's common between you and the officers that have went through the academy is basically your shirt color and your pants color. Like, that's really it. You don't have a name tag. You don't have a badge. You don't have any equipment on, like Robbie was saying. And I don't know about Robbie, you might have felt differently, but I remember feeling when I was in that state, I felt like a kindergartner again, you know, first day of school, kind of like, oh, well, somebody had to hold my hand and walk me through that. Cause I didn't know dick. I mean, just straight up. I didn't know a dog's turd from my own turd. I mean, just being real. So,
I mean, and I kind of had that same experience the first time, but I mean, mm-hmm. I've been through the academy twice, or really three times. My first hire on with the state, then the hire on with the sheriff's office, then the hire on with the state the second time.
Yeah.
And the second time was completely different than the first time.
Because I think didn't we come back? Because when we met, we had come back to corrections, and you and I went through a similar academy at that time.
It was during COVID where, the academy was shut down.
Yep.
And we were doing everything at the facility. Mm-hmm. And it was, which luckily everything has went back to, you know, where we go to the academy, where you're there. And
you're pushed. You are intentionally put under stress. And for our listeners out there, to kind of really paint that picture, when you're doing the academy at the facility, you don't have drill instructors. You don't have you just have training staff, quote unquote. They are not qualified to necessarily or legally allowed. I don't know which one it would fall under. Either way, they're not. They don't get in your face. They don't. They can't punish you. Robbie, I don't know if you went through the similar situation, but when I went through originally in 2017, we were smoked. And what that means for the listener is, you could do anything in front of the drill instructor that they didn't like, and they may not like it that day, but they might like it the next day. You didn't know, and they would run you. They would run. They'd make you run. They would make you push-ups, sit-ups, burpees, jumping jacks, anything and everything they could to break you and what they thought might be considered bad habits or bad behaviors. And they were trying to know what you're made of. When I was at the academy at the facility, you didn't have that. So you weren't able to weed out a lot of people.
You weren't able to weed out a lot of the bad officers.
Right, 100%.
It is the best. Because then, you know, whenever you go through the academy, that's the time to where you build your discipline. Just like, you know, I wasn't in the military.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wasn't in the military, but, you know, my whole background, my whole family was. And just from some of the graphs that I get where, you know, you get people up in your face, you know, they're treating you like an inmate is more or less what they're doing. That's something that whenever you go into the facility, you really have to be assertive, but not too assertive.
Well, you can't be emotionally driven, and that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to put that pressure on you that's going to come apart, that's going to be a part of the everyday job. So to see if you're going to react with emotion, because in our job, we cannot respond with emotion. We have to be very much rid of it.
Yeah, I don't quite agree with that. I mean, I've had some times to where reacting with emotion is very beneficial.
Okay.
Yeah. I've had several times to where, you know, if you're normally a quiet officer, just mm-hmm. give that for example, and they just want to sit there and push you and push you and push you. Yeah. You know, if you can really use, if you're not the type of person to, you know, to swear or to use certain language or raise your voice, mm-hmm. I've seen, you know, I can get very loud. I can be very joking and, mm-hmm. You know, cutting up with inmates, and it's a flip of a switch. Something happens to where an inmate steps out of line, mm-hmm. and, you know, you got to go from 0 to 100 very fast.
Yeah.
And if you can do that effectively,
mm-hmm.
then that will de-escalate probably 80 to 90% of that situation.
Oh, 100%. That goes back to what we kind of talked about a lot, addressed on last episode, of being able to use your mouth, being able to use your words. In at least in my experience, that's been my saving grace has been I had to learn it the hard way. But once I learned it, it became the best tool. In our field, we call it verbal judo. It's being able to navigate different communication styles while being able to be firm and fair with everyone and get your point across and get the desired task accomplished without taking it to the next level of force or whatever, like, or even a disciplinary. Mm-hmm. You know, during my time at the sheriff's office, I was given the moniker of the inmate whisperer because I became proficient in that art, and it takes a lot.
Yeah, it's one of those. It can take years to become effective at it,
mm-hmm.
and it's something, you know, after my about 10 years in this line of work, you know, I still catch myself going overboard.
Yep.
And something that I tell all the new guys that I train is don't be afraid to apologize to these inmates. Yeah, you're going to get one thing that will make your job in this line of work extremely pleasant is mm-hmm. having a very good rapport with these inmates.
Yeah,
and I've never liked whenever officers will tell you, you know, you're not supposed to be friends with these inmates. Yes, you're not supposed to be friends with them. You're not supposed to be friendly, but I don't think there's a problem with having a professional friendship. You know, like how you would interact with a coworker, like in an office setting. You know, I don't think there's anything like that, and that's something that is so detached.
Yeah, see, I can tell you a funny story about that. In my rookie year, I developed that rapport with, because I was a pod officer. Basically, my assignment was I ran a housing unit. So that's where I ran an area where the inmates live. You know, they had their cells, inside their cells, that was considered their house, metaphorically speaking. And what I would, once I developed a good rapport with those inmates, a funny story, what I would do, I knew certain ones that I could play around with, nothing disrespectful or blatant, but it was little things like one. I'll never forget one inmate in particular I had. He knew that I was a Georgia fan. I loved the University of Georgia football team. Listeners, I'm sorry if I offended anybody, but go Dogs. So get over yourself. Back-to-back national champions. So suck it. Anyway,
when was the last time on that?
2022. That's not the point, Robbie. Stay on topic. But anyway, in particular, I had an inmate who was a huge Alabama fan. He had a TV in the cell. I'll never forget. And he would play rid me about the University of Georgia. Because at the time, this was 2017. You know, Georgia, we were on our rise to national championship stardom. We couldn't get past the Alabama hump. But anyway, in going back to this, trying to stay on topic, he said it was right when Georgia and Alabama were supposed to play in the SEC championship game. And I looked at him and told him, I said, let me tell you something, old boy. Alabama beats Georgia. It's coming Saturday. I'm coming back Monday, and I'm putting you in the hole for 30 days, huh? Bet. Don't believe me. Just watch. You better hope and pray that Alabama don't beat us. And he said, right. He said, man, you can't do that. And I said, watch me. I'll make up something. Of course, it was a joke. And I come back, and I guess he had forgotten about it. But I didn't, because I knew I wanted to mess with him. Spoiler alert, Alabama beat us that year in the SEC championship. But I come back that following Monday, and I went right to his cell. And I said, pack your shit, man. He said, for what? I said, I told you it was going to happen. Alabama beat Georgia. Pack your shit. You're going to the hole for 30 days. I said, I ain't having that disrespect now. And he starts to believe me because, I mean, I'm serious. I'm portraying it as serious as I can be. And I just wait. And I know this might be kind of cruel, but he thought it was a good laugh in the end. I waited for him to get about a quarter of his stuff packed up. And I went to him. I said, man, quit packing. He said, what you mean? And I said, I can't send you the hole for that. Man, I thought you were serious. It was just all one giant laugh. He cussed me. He said, fuck you. And I said, well, fuck, go fuck yourself. I don't give a shit. And it was all fun. But that is an example of the rapport that certain officers can have with certain inmates. Now, I didn't have this rapport with all of my inmates that lived in my housing unit, but I had it with him and some others, and I knew I could get away with it. So, yeah, Robbie, have you ever had anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, usually the ones in my experience that you can have that kind of, I guess, relationship with are going to be, you know, your convicts.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And some of them. So, I mean, some of your convicts, they don't want to talk to you. They don't want anything to do with you. But, I mean, they're always respectful.
Now, Robert, you said convicts. For our listeners out there, what does that mean? Is there a difference between convict and inmate? And if there is, you explain that for our listeners that have been exposed to this line of work.
Yeah, so your convict is going to be – think of it as you go into a business world and you're like your first day going into an office, like an office job. Mm-hmm. Your convict is going to be kind of like the boss. They're going to be super respectful. They're going to be straightforward with you. They don't play around. It's like an executive boss as to where, you know, especially these young kids. You know, those are the inmates.
Oh yeah.
And they're just, they'll swing on you in a heartbeat.
Just for looking at
them. And that's where, especially the facility that I'm in now, it's miles different between the other ones that I've worked at. But, and you know, I encourage everybody that goes into this. You know, everybody's always said it's weird, you know, to where even if you don't wear glasses, to where some of our special operation guys, you know, they wear clear glasses. And I tell you what, if you've ever been, whenever you go through the academy, you're going to get sprayed.
Oh, yeah. OC like a motherfucker.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to get sprayed. And I wear glasses, but some of the times that I've sprayed, and that if you deploy your OC, that shit's coming back on you.
Oh yeah, there's no getting around it at all.
Yeah, it's terrible. I'd rather be tased than.
But I will tell you though, one thing I like about OC, if you're stopped up your sinuses, you won't be long afterwards. I can promise you that. You'll be pouring snot out of your head that you forgot you had back when you were five, son. That shit'll get up in there and it'll open you up.
Yeah, but you know, and with the, you know, like with spray day, you know, whenever you get sprayed in the academy, you know, it's kind of your rite of passage.
Oh yeah.
You know, I mean, especially whenever you, because whenever I was going through the academy, mm-hmm. you had officers that were going, or I guess supervisors, that they would go for their new supervisor training. Mm-hmm. And that was something that I remember they wouldn't even really associate with you until after you go through, you know, after you go through your initiation, which is being sprayed.
Yeah, because I mean, I remember even telling new officers that I had shadow me throughout my career. And I mean, I would always bring that up. You're not one of us until you at least get OC, period. You're not in the brotherhood. You're not yet. You're not in the family yet. But once you get OC'd, we see you as more of one of us. It's kind of one of those things. If you've not done it, you're never going to be one of us. You have to be exposed. And for the listener out there that is kind of probably sitting there wondering, like, well, what is the significance of OC? That is our main tool that we have at our disposal to defend ourselves.
It's our only tool. I mean, at the end of the day, it's our only primarily use of force. You know, even some sergeants in facilities don't carry tasers.
Yeah.
Basically, unless you're a lieutenant or lieutenant or captain.
Yeah.
In the facility that I'm at now, you know, you're not carrying a taser. But as in the facility that I was at before this one, if you're a corporal, sergeant, lieutenant, or captain, you're carrying a taser.
And there's a different level of inmate that you have, different type of inmate/convict. And, you know, I can... Robbie, I don't know. Do you have any funny stories about when you got OC'd or even witnessed? Because I know you and I both have witnessed several times the initial OC of a new officer.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see. So the first time, so I've been sprayed three different times on.
That's where I do.
For the academy. Yeah. I've been sprayed three different times by two different OCs. The first one that I got sprayed with was Saber Red.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I thought it was bad. And so whenever I was going through it, they sprayed me and I opened. So they say that there's like a small, like 2% of people that aren't affected by OC.
Yeah. We call those demons.
Well, and I thought the first time that I got sprayed, I thought that I was a part of that 2% because I got hit. I opened my eyes. Nothing happened. I didn't feel a burn. I didn't feel anything. So I go. So whenever you get sprayed, the instructor, and whenever my first time it was a drill instructor back in 2014. They walk up. How many fingers am I holding up? They ask you a couple questions to make sure you're doing okay, and then you go off, and then you go over to decontaminate. They mm-hmm. usually have water spraying up. But I walk over there and nothing has happened. Mm-hmm. Looking back, I probably should have wiped some off my face just before I hit water. But man, I hit that water and it felt like the best description is it felt like the devil whipped out his dick and pissed on your face.
See, I was going to say like the devil's asshole himself. Like he just took a massive, he just put his stink eye right in your damn face.
Oh yeah, for sure.
It's like the devil.
But I will say the second time that I got sprayed was so much worse because I got sprayed with Freeze Plus B.
That stuff's
a different demon. And whenever that was at the sheriff's office. And honestly, I wish we would go to that with the state because it's a whole lot more effective.
Yeah.
Because with the Saber Red, all you're going to get is the effect of eye burn. It's going to make it where you can't see.
Well, that's the difference between water-based and oil-based. That's a
the Freeze Plus P is water-based too.
Oh, really?
The difference is Freeze Plus P has OC in it.
Oh, okay. I got you.
And whenever it hits you and you start breathing in those vapors, it makes it to where you can't, or it makes it to where you feel like you can't breathe.
Yeah, it's all a mind fuck for the listeners out there.
Yeah,
it really tricks your brain.
Yeah, and if you can stay calm,
mm-hmm.
the hardest part about it is staying calm. If you can stay calm, the pain is going to go away relatively quickly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you definitely want to go hit that water and then get out of it as soon as you can, because the faster you get out of the water, you got to – your main priority for that is to get your eyes open.
Yep.
And it's it's one of the hardest things to do. But, I mean, I literally had to take my fingers and just force my eye to open.
Yep, I did the same thing, yeah.
Yeah, my second spray was definitely more memorable because I had my father-in-law there.
And pansy.
Well, no, I mean, it was – he got pictures. So for those – whenever you go through
– Robbie had a support group with him, it sounds like. Only thing I had was me and God, okay? It was me, myself, and I and God, all right?
Well, I mean, but unfortunately, and I also had a witness.
I had several, and they were all laughing.
Well, so usually, you know, at getting sprayed, they don't let people take pictures because, and I'll tell you one thing, if you've never been sprayed, you are not allowed there.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
That's definitely the rule. That's another rule.
Yeah.
Because he was at the sheriff's office, and he was one of the reasons that I went there too. And it was just, that stuff was so much worse. And whenever you get hit there, they make you do push-ups right after. The sheriff's office was a little more intense at that time after you get sprayed.
Yeah.
Whereas in the state, you know, you just get sprayed, they ask you a couple questions. They make you open your eyes to see. But, I mean, as soon as you let go of your eyes, they're going to shut right back.
Oh, yeah, because the natural instinct is to clamp shut. Mm. And, I'm going to tell a funny story about the first time that I got OC'd. And, by the way, for everybody, all of our viewers out there, Robbie is what I would call a glutton for punishment, because I only got sprayed technically twice. And the second time wasn't – the second time going to the academy, all of us that had been sprayed before, we all kind of came together and said, hey, guys, we're just going to take the eye swap. We can just swap it under eyes. Robbie, he's a glutton for punishment. I guess I am too, because, you know, we both are married. So there is some truth to that somewhere. But the first time that I got sprayed, I'll never forget it, because I am what a lot of people consider a walking Murphy's Law. And this is a prime example of that. I got up there to get sprayed. I think I was like the fifth or sixth in line, but I was just in that right position where the drill instructor gets up there. He takes the can. He hits me in my left eye and stops at my nose. And he said, stay right there. I ran out. Hold on. I couldn't get you the full way. Me being naive, young, and dumb, I thought, okay, I'm bracing for it. I thought, okay, he's just going to finish. He's going to, you know, finish where he started. Oh, bullshit. My left eye, he started completely back over and went completely across my face. And, you know, he told me to open my eyes, and I did. And I got escorted to another drill instructor. And, well, the way it worked with us is the phases were you went to the first drill instructor, and he asked you two basic questions. The first question was, how many fingers am I holding up? The second one can literally be about anything, not department related. Didn't have to be. But the thing was, the rule was, there's only one drill instructor. So if you had an officer that just went sprayed and he couldn't get his questions right, the line would back up. Again, walking
Murphy, for sure.
I was stuck behind. I don't even know what the questions were, but I remember I was able to answer their questions, that person in front of me's questions, because I'm tortured. Like, I am being tortured. But they don't take my answers for them. But anyway, at this point, I'm getting mad. I thought I let out the most warrior-like, manly, aggressive scream. Kind of find out later it was very high-pitched and very feminine later on when everybody told me later. Because everybody made fun of me for that.
Probably about like a cat getting his nuts stuck somewhere.
I would say it would equate it to like a cat getting his nuts locked into a rusty vise that you can't get open. And he's trying to pull him out. Like he's trying to get rid of it. but like almost trying to give himself a self castration. That was kind of the equivalent to the noise. But anyway, I get up there and I answer my questions, whatever. And at our spray location, we had this covered canopy. Well, like Robbie and I just touched on earlier, when you get sprayed, the only thing to really cure is wind and tears. You got to get your eyes open. You got to get in the sun. You got to get blinking to get really deconned. Me not thinking about it, I went underneath the canopy. That was mistake number one. Keep in mind, I'm blind at this point. I can't see a foot in front of me. I started to feel like Ray Charles. I totally understand what, you know, and I don't really give a shit if that's politically incorrect. That's how I felt. Welcome to Uncensored. So anyway, I hear this voice come over to me and says, hey, come on, we need to get you up here. Again, can't see a foot, 2 feet in front of me. Mm-hmm. I say, fuck you, no. he drags me and puts me over there. Well, anyway, I get to the point where I can see again. Everybody's gotten sprayed. It was this guy comes up, was a drill instructor. He said, I need to speak to you for a minute. Okay, what? You realize it was me you cussed, right? No. At this point, my life is flashing before my eyes. I'm thinking, before you kill me, can you at least give me one call home to my family to tell them that I love them before I die? And I mean, he's just as serious as all can be. And he starts smiling. And he said, I'm going to let that slide because that was some of the funniest shit. And I know you didn't realize it was me that told you that. I said, at this point, I need a new pair of britches and under britches because I just pissed myself. That's an understatement. But he said, don't you ever do that. Don't you ever do that to me again. Yes, sir. And I just, I booked it out of there. I felt like Usain Bolt because how fast I got the hell out of there. There was just like a dust print, dust outline of me. Yeah. And I never will forget that day. But see, I was smart, unlike Robbie. When I went to another agency, I didn't get sprayed again. I made sure of that.
Well, unfortunately, my second time, I really didn't have a choice because it was a different spray. And for everybody that doesn't know why we get sprayed, the reason that we have to get done any type of things we use, whether it be, which it's not really like that for tasers for some reason. Tasers were always optional if you want to have them used on you. But I'm a firm believer in if you're going to use something, you need to know the effects that it has on somebody.
Including fire. Because that's why Robbie and I have both been shot.
You're funny man. No, but just so, because if you're in this field long enough, chance, very high likelihood that you're going to end up in court.
Yeah.
And if, you have to be able to justify everything you did. And it's going to sound a whole lot better to a judge if they say, why did you tase this person? Or why did you use the spray? Mm-hmm. I can say, I know what it's like.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's one of the first questions they ask you is, have you used this? Yeah. The same thing with the firearms whenever you go through.
Yeah.
Depending on your scores,
mm-hmm.
All that stuff's documented and it's kept for the whole time. So
yeah,
if you ever have to get into, a lethal use of force, mm-hmm. it's, if you for some reason miss them and it ends up hitting something that you can't.
Yeah.
Or like if it ends up missing the offender and hitting a bystander, for example.
You do have to answer for that.
And then, but that's, but that's outside of work too.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. You have a little more leniency, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
But like ours is based off of bullet counts whenever mm-hmm. we qualify.
Yeah.
And the highest you can get is a 250. I think you have to get a
200, isn't it?
20. 200. Yeah, it's 200.
Yeah, it's 200.
And like for me, example, the last two times that last one that I requalified for, I shot a 249, and that's so if I shoot and I miss, and then I end up having to go to court on it, you know, they're going to be like, well, if your qualifications and certifications are this, mm-hmm. you know, why did you miss by 30 feet?
Yeah.
So that's something to keep in mind. But I mean, at the end of the day, you know, after you get through your spray day and all of the options, they'll give you the options of whether you want to be tased. Mm-hmm. And usually if you let somebody use the taser on you, it's usually going to be one of your buddies that you meet. And
yeah.
And yeah. Then you'll go on to doing your self-defense stuff and your cell extraction training. And that's one thing that, that I look back on and cherish now is all the friends that I've made from across the state.
Oh yeah,
that's something that's different from the sheriff's office.
Yeah,
is whenever you go through the academies, you know, let's just say we got 12 state facilities.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're going to be going to facilities with all these guys, and mm-hmm. in my position now, I'm waiting to go back and run across some of these guys that I went through the academy with.
Yeah,
being in a travel position. So, now, go ahead.
I just kind of wanted to really kind of circle back, if I may, to our listeners that are thinking about a career in corrections to kind of more paint the picture. As far as OC, it is not uncommon for the majority of people that are you're in the academy with to be afraid of getting sprayed. It is very, very common. But do not let that deter you from going through it. When I tell you that I was looked at differently after I got sprayed in more respected light, it is very, very true. Don't let that fear control you. I had a drill instructor once famously say to me, embrace the suck. It's gonna have to happen. Just ride along with it. You're not alone in all this.
There's something that told me was there's no such thing as pain. It's just weakness leaving the body.
Yeah, yeah. That's. And I've had a lot of weakness leaving my body.
Yeah, I mean, especially going into cell extractions. I mean, and whenever you know, it's just your training.
Yeah.
Training cell extractions, and I've seen people get hurt in training.
Yep. For them. I was hurt in training.
But you know, so you go through all of that, and then you know your reward at the end is, you know, you get to have your family come in, and it's a very. I remember the first time that I graduated. I was fortunate enough to have my grandfather there. Mm-hmm. He's no longer with me. So it's a very proud feeling that you get, and even though this career field is looked down on by some people just because, you know, we don't carry a gun and we don't walk the streets, or you know, we're forgot about, but it is a career to where you can be super proud of.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a career to where you make a difference, whether people want to tell you that you do or you don't.
All guts, no guns, but all glory.
Absolutely. And so after you go through the academy and you graduate, you get your badge. That's
the best ones in the world.
Yeah, it is. And unfortunately, you think that that's part of the hardest part. I mean, really, my hardest part was my first day going in.
Yeah.
When you step into that, you step into the role of an enforcer.
Yeah, the reality.
And as soon as and as soon as you step into that role, all of your all of your old you, you kind of have to set it aside, and you have to kind of shape. You have to shape a new
version of yourself.
Yeah,
that's
because I'm.
You gotta leave it. You gotta leave your personal life at the door. 100% You can't let it affect your.
Not only that. Whenever, like, if anybody ever meets me outside of work, I'm a very soft spoken. I don't raise my voice until. Yeah, I mean, I am. I mean, I'm not a very assertive person. So that's, you know, that's the grasp of this career. It's only the, you're going to spend the next year shaping yourself and learning from the experienced officers, and hopefully you can get a good IFTO.
Yep. Yep. And I think that would be a great topic for next episode, is the days after the academy and your FTO. That would be a whole discussion. Be a great topic.
Yeah, for sure.
So.
Yeah. So I think we're going to wrap it up with that. Mm-hmm. As far as I know we probably didn't go as far into the rookie year as we needed to. We kind of only really touched base with just the academy and some of the importance and some of the stuff that you're going to look back. And I hope if for our listeners, whenever you go through, if you decide to do it, look back and cherish it. 100%. And if there's anything that we didn't cover that you want to know, feel free to reach out to us and we'll answer everything you can.
Yeah, most definitely.
Because there's so much to, there is so much that we couldn't possibly cover everything.
And that's one of the reasons we created this, so we can, in steps, get this information out there. Because I wish I had something like this when I first started my career, but I didn't have anything like this. Hence the birth of Correctional Commentary.
Yep. So I guess we're going to wrap it up there.
Yeah. Guys, be safe. For all of our COs that are out there that are listening, watch your six. Stay safe. We love you guys. We're praying for you. Our thoughts and prayers are with you guys and your families. Robbie, you stay safe as well.
All right. We will see y'all next time, guys.